Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello, and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with architectural historians Karen Kingsley and Lake Douglas about their new book, Buildings of New Orleans. Kingsley, Professor Emerita of Architecture at Tulane University, and Lake Douglas, Associate Dean for Research and Development, and Professor, Robert Reich School of Landscape Architecture at Louisiana State University, are two of the great authorities on architecture in New Orleans, with many books to their credit. So a new book from either one of them is a welcome event, and one from both of them is extremely special. Today, we'll be talking about Buildings of New Orleans, a new volume in the Society of Architectural Historians' Buildings of the United States Guides. Lake is joining us in the studio, and Karen is joining us by phone from Washington, D.C. Karen, I'm so happy to welcome you to The Reading Life.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be on it. I'm so glad you do this program.
Thank you, and you too, Lake.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
We're welcoming you back. Yes. Now, this is such a handy and useful book in what looks to be a terrific series. And Karen, you're the editor of the entire series, aren't you?
Yes.
So how did you set about choosing the cities and then choosing the 300 sites in this particular book?
Oh, big question. The books themselves are state by state. The first one that came out was in 1993. And we choose the states in part because authors who are very familiar with that state want to write a book on their state. Sometimes we also approach people to take on their state, which is sort of a challenge, a big challenge. So we've got 23 volumes so far on different states or parts of states. And we initiated a city guide series for cities that are really rich in architecture, and that richness cannot be covered within the sort of confines of a state volume. So the first one was Savannah a couple of years ago, and then New Orleans was selected now. We have an editorial advisory committee who sort of oversees everything as well.
So you and Lake must have had a great time working on this. And Lake, tell us about choosing these 300 places.
Well, a lot of what's here appeared in another form in Karen's earlier book, which she did, The Buildings of Louisiana, and that came out in 2003. So what we did was we went through that and made notes, a lot of sticky notes, on what needed to be adjusted. Some buildings are no longer with us, and some things have changed. Other buildings have expanded or new buildings have been added to the cityscape. So we went through that very carefully and decided what needed to be added, and also included parks and open spaces, which I was happy to be part of.
Mm-hmm. And so many of the buildings are public buildings. I loved that there are libraries and schools and churches included, along with these gorgeous homes that we associate with New Orleans.
Yes, that's true. And one of the reasons is because since the books are designed for tourists as well as scholars and locals and educators, we want buildings that people can access and see from the street. So we don't include buildings that are invisible. that's my way of putting it. And also buildings that people can go into. That's kind of important, I think, for understanding a city when you come to it, or even living within the city.
And you start at the very heart of the city, which is Jackson Square.
Well, it is the heart.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. How could we not?
I know, but I never think of Jackson Square as buildings so much as I do of people. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You know, architecture in New Orleans is full of great stories of people. I think of the Baroness Pontalba, of course, after reading Christina Vella's great biography. So what are some of the favorite stories of people and architecture that appeal to you two? Karen, can you think of one?
Yes, not so much related to people in that way. The former automobile life insurance building on Upper Canal that was designed in 1963 has now become the Mid-City Public Library. And so I always liked the building. It was so open and welcoming, and it's very modern. But now the repurposing is perfect for a library.
It is. It is.
It's light, and it wants to welcome you in. So that's sort of one of my favorite buildings at present. But I tend to like all buildings.
Uh-huh.
That's a difficult question.
What about you, Lake? Any great characters in New Orleans architecture?
Well, there are many, of mm-hmm. course. One of my favorites is stories is how the Lafitte Greenway got built. There were a lot of people involved. That was post-Katrina, of course. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of people involved in that. And it has, in just a few short years that it's been open, proved to be very popular with people. And I think a place that everybody enjoys.
And that's one of the newest spaces in this book.
Yes, it is.
So you all have brought this survey as up to date as you could within your time constraints.
Well, we wanted it to be as current as possible, and we were adding photographs as late as last fall for mm-hmm. the book, taking photographs for the book. So we tried to make it as current as possible.
And that is the goal of the Buildings of the United States series, is to have the range of buildings from the beginning of time up to the present, and all types of buildings as well. Then I'm very pleased to have that Lafitte Greenway in the book because it's so important to the history of New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
what it evokes.
Now, one of the things I love about architecture in New Orleans is that people here love to talk about it. I think of the members of Le Petit Salon, and they have those little pins that celebrate the architecture, the distinctive ironwork of their building. People celebrate architecture. There's a Christmas tree ornament of Ladder Library. Is that something unique to New Orleans, do you think?
I think it's something that's celebrated perhaps more in New Orleans than in other cities. But I think New Yorkers, for example, get very proud of their buildings in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think people today are more conscious of buildings and the ornamentation on buildings, and you often see fragments extracted from the building to appear as a logo or as a trademark or as a mark on something about the city.
Ah, that's
true for Chicago, because all those Louis Sullivan and Frank Lloyd Wright buildings, there are little brooches and
bracelets and necklaces
everywhere.
And,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shotgun house has been made to.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, one of the things you have to do with New Orleans architecture, though, is debunk so much of the mythology that's grown up around places. And I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that. Lake, you've really debunked a few myths in your time.
Well, it's not only debunking myths, I think, but it's also giving accurate information.
Of course.
About who did what and making connections. For instance, a building of interest is now Camp Bow Wow on Chapultepec at Jackson, I think. And the architect there was Albert Ledner, and not too many people know that his mother was Beulah Ledner,
yes.
of Dobear's cake fame. So just having that information, I think, is a lot of fun to know and be able to point out to visitors.
I know, it made me very happy to be thumbing through this book and get to Camp Bow Wow. I mean, it's just like architectural significance everywhere you look.
Yes.
Now, we also have, because this is the reading life, we also have such strong literary associations with some parts of our architecture. You know, a lot of it's related to Tennessee Williams, Anne Rice. You know, you can't drive by First and Chestnut without seeing a line of devoted pilgrims who've come to her house. You have a little section about writing, particularly in the quarter in this book, Karen.
Yes, the sidebars, those are sidebars, there's 9 of them scattered throughout the book. And each book has sidebars, and they focus on a theme or topic that can't be covered in a single building entry. And give us something of the flavor of the city. So in this we have food, cooking, vegetation, historic preservation, neutral grounds. All of those have become sidebars in the book because they are something unique to New Orleans and give us a complete sense of the place.
And I love that writers come here and
yes.
and see that. There's this, I believe he's Australian gentleman who's just written a book called Rooms of One's Own, and he came to New Orleans specifically to see Tennessee Williams' rooms, you know, and he thought, yeah, I could write here.
We couldn't omit Tennessee Williams.
No.
Well, writing the sidebars for me was a lot of fun because we're challenged by word count, of course, and trying to say something of importance in a few words is a challenge on one hand, but it's a lot of fun on the other.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now, as I said, you come right up to date. I mean, you talk about the Lafitte Greenway in this book, and you also include the former site of the Robert E. Lee statue. I guess we call it the Robert E. Lee pedestal at the moment, you know, and that's been a terrific alteration of the built environment lately.
Yes, it is, and it's still the subject of a lot of conversation. I was at a conference last week of educators in landscape architecture in Virginia, and this was one of the main topics that was discussed, is how do we deal with this as a community, as a profession, as people who are involved in the built environment? And nobody has an easy answer.
Right. And also, you've brought into play such incredibly modern, big structures as the National World War II Museum in the Museum District.
Right.
That's truly altered our landscape.
Right. And just today was the announcement of breaking ground on some sort of signature covering that will encompass all the buildings. Did you see that in the newspaper?
Fascinating. Fascinating. We're always, you know, we're such an old city, but we're always changing,
yeah.
You know? So I have to ask you both, because this is a game I play with myself all the time driving around. If you could only choose one building in New Orleans, if you had to pick a favorite, what would it be, Karen?
It's not really a building. It's City Park.
Ah.
To me, it's a perfect combination of landscape, buildings, pavilions, water, sculpture, and the perfect place to walk because you get different views. And a real sense of peace with all those old trees. When I lived in New Orleans for 25 years, it was my favorite place to go when I was feeling stressed or frustrated.
Uh-huh.
Or just because I wanted to look at the changing landscape there. Because it is sort of different and the light is different during the course of the year. So I'm not sure that quite answers your question, but in terms of favorite, that's City Park.
It's a place.
It's a place. Yes.
And it's in this book. So,
Right. So
Lake, what about you?
Well, like Karen, it's not a building for me. It's Bayou St. John from the lake to where it ends and then begins the Lafitte Corridor. Because that, for me, expresses the entire history of the city from its very founding through everything that's happened right up to today. So for me, that's the favorite part of the city. And of course, I live on Bayou St. John.
So. And some people are beginning to think of that as the real heart of the city.
Yes.
These days, as we learn more and more about its history, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So you must have some stories of going out and photographing these buildings, too.
We did. We had to bring some images up to date. And we went out on several occasions just looking and taking shots. And then we needed to, once those got delivered to the press, we needed some more. So I went back out and shot some more. So it was a lot of fun.
I know. We're a very photogenic city, aren't we? Well, that's what makes this book so useful. These photographs are very handy and it's just the right size. And it's just fun to read. Everything about it is a pleasure.
Well, the format is designed to fit in your backpack. It's paper and hardcover, but I think the paper edition will find a lot of favor with people who like to throw things in a backpack and go.
Right.
And now with all the bicycles we've got in town.
And now you have to make it an app.
Yeah, right.
That's the next thing. Yeah. Karen, you need to add it a series of apps. Somehow I don't think that's going to happen. We've been talking with Karen Kingsley and Lake Douglas, who are the co-authors of Buildings of New Orleans. You can meet them Tuesday, April 3rd from 6:30 to 8 at the Louisiana Humanities Center at 938 Lafayette Street in New Orleans, and again Wednesday, April 4th from 6 to 7 at the Hill Memorial Library at LSU in Baton Rouge. And then they'll be back in New Orleans Saturday, April 7th to sign the book from 1 to 3 at the Garden District Bookshop. Karen and Lake, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. This was fun.
It's a pleasure.
Always.
Blinded lakes are so blue, and the architecture I'm taking in with my mind, so fine.
The world loves a funny woman, and take it from me, Sloane Crosley is a very funny woman. She's been chronicling the gap between expectation and reality for a very long time now, ever since the publication of I Was Told There Would Be Cake. In her new collection, Look Alive Out There, we're treated to her latest adventures. It's hard out here in the world, but Sloane Crosley is a boon companion, a thinking woman not afraid of her sharp edges. We see it from the first essay called Wheels Up, when she is late for a plane, but hoodwinked into giving up her cab by a woman in a wheelchair, who's rolling point for her husband, who hops into the cab and leaves his disabled wife behind. Then she zooms down the street and runs over a dog's tail with her wheelchair and never looks back. I'm telling you, life in New York can be brutal. Some of Sloane's better New York essays, The Great Man, about a neighbor whose vines grew above her window, and Immediate Family, about a neighbor whose name she learns at a wake, talk about the closeness and distance of people who live in the same building, the unknown lives of others who live in proximity. Muriel Rukeyser once asked, in a poetic context, I think, what would happen if one woman told the truth about her life? The world would split open. Sloane Crosley takes her truths, her whole life, out into the world. In Relative Strangers, she visits her sort of uncle, really a first cousin once removed, a retired porn star who comes across as downright lovable. He got into porn to find a girlfriend. See what I mean about the hope-reality gap? But nevertheless, he has his own brand of wisdom to dispense. She lets us in on some harrowing experiences, and up the down volcano, she gets altitude sickness while climbing a mountain for a travel piece. And then there's her horrific struggle with vertigo in Cinema of the Confined. Look Alive Out There is a book of highs and lows, and different types of highs, as in If You Take the Canoe Out, when she meets a prosperous marijuana farmer in California. And then, in The Doctor is a Woman, she decides to freeze her eggs, shoring up fertility for the future. It's more harrowing than you might think, and more expensive. But in the end, it's hopeful. Maybe it's the most hopeful act there is. Long story short, Sloane Crosley is just the sort of guest you want at your ideal dinner party. But why take my word for it? You can meet her Friday, April 6th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop, when she appears in conversation with Nathaniel Rich.
I want to marry a lighthouse keeper and keep him company. I want to marry a lighthouse keeper and live by the side of the sea. I'll polish his lamp by the light of day so troops at night can find their way. I want to marry a lighthouse keeper, won't that be okay? Along the moonlit bay, maybe find a treasure too. I'd love living in a lighthouse. How about you? I dream of living in a lighthouse, baby, every single day. I dream of living in a lighthouse, a white one by the bay.
books have inspired some fascinating and surprising songs. Take a listen to U2's amazing love song, The Ground Beneath Her Feet, inspired by the Salman Rushdie novel of the same name. It's from their 2002 album, The Million Dollar Hotel, Songs from the Motion Picture. And Rushdie himself makes an appearance in the video. And if you think you hear some familiar strains in that pedal steel guitar, it's the work of New Orleans favorite Daniel Lanois. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. C.S. Harris signs Why Kill the Innocent, the 13th in her Sebastian St. Cyr series, Tuesday, April 3rd at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Seamus McGraw discusses and signs A Thirsty Land, the making of an American water crisis, Tuesday, April 3rd at 6 at Octavia Books. Karen Kingsley and Lake Douglas discuss and sign Buildings of New Orleans, Tuesday, April 3rd from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Louisiana Humanities Center, 938 Lafayette Street, New Orleans. Again, Wednesday, April 4th from 6 to 7 at the Hill Memorial Library at LSU in Baton Rouge. And they'll be back Saturday, April 7th from 1 to 3 at Garden District Bookshop in New Orleans. Historian Winston Ho presents discussions of Chinese history on four consecutive Wednesday nights at 7 in April at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. First up is Chinese American History in New Orleans, 150 Years, Wednesday, April 4th at 7. Alan Gothrow discusses his new book, Bloodstained Louisiana, 12 Murder Cases, 1896 to 1934, Thursday, April 5th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Jake Black signs World Wrestling Federation's Superstar Guide, Friday, April 6th at 3 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. Sloane Crossley, whose new book of essays is Look Alive Out There, discusses her work with Nathaniel Rich, whose new book is King Zeno. That's Friday, April 6th from 6 to 7:30 at Garden District Bookshop. And coming up soon, the Big Book Sale, sponsored by the Friends of the Jefferson Public Library, takes place April 5th through 8th at the Pontchartrain Center, Williams Boulevard at the Lake in Kenner. Hours are Thursday through Saturday, April 5th through 7th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Sunday, April 8th from noon to 5. Free admission, free parking. The sale includes more than 65,000 items, and auction items include George O'Keefe's 100 Flowers, a copy of The History of the Vietnam War, and the book Quadrupeds of North America by James Audubon. The Delta Mouth Literary Festival takes place at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge Friday, April 6th through Sunday, April 8th. It features Anne Gislason, Dylan Krieger, Kiese Lehman, and many others. Check out the Facebook page or deltamouth.com for the complete schedule. Books Along the Tesh is also coming up next weekend in New Iberia, April 6th through 8th. The featured author this year is Ernest Gaines. Events include symposia, storytelling, James Lee Burke tours, and movie screenings. Check out booksalongthetashliteraryfestival.com for information and tickets. Coming up, Laura Mullen is the 2017-2018 Aaron's Poet at Newcomb College Institute. She will be reading Monday, April 9th at 7 at the Freeman Auditorium, Waldenburg Arts Center, Tulane University. Also coming up, start thinking about what you'd like to bake for Edible Book Day. A cake inspired by your favorite book, perhaps? It all takes place Saturday, April 21st from 10 to 3 at the New Orleans Museum of Art. Check out the events calendar at noma.org for details. New Orleans Public Library Director Charles Brown and I will be on hand to judge all the deliciousness. And here at The Reading Life, we're celebrating New Orleans' tricentennial by putting together a list of 300 great books about New Orleans. Send us your favorites at labooks@wwno.org and see if they make the list. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.